when life's good to you and things are going well and operations going well, it's easy to have good character. But when your back's against the wall, you have challenges to meet, that's when somebody's true character comes out in your leadership.
Hi, my name is Jason Hall. I'm the president of AMCO, or the American Master Chefs Order. Some history on AMCO. It was formed in 2014 by a group of master chefs, including Bill Franklin, who spearheaded this concept. The idea was to look at the brand, see how we can further develop it and develop the exam going forward to meet ever-changing needs within the industry, to offer a coming together of our guild once you've passed the exam on the other side, and then also to start to develop the training and support needed for candidates as they approach the exam. Our mission is to promote, sustain, and perfect our craft, all while identifying and supporting and inspiring the next generation of candidates as they progress towards becoming an American Master Chef. You can reach us and see more information on our website at AmericanMasterChefsOrder.org. Thank you.
Good morning and welcome to the latest episode of the AMCO podcast. We're here today with Master Chef Ed Leonard, who is the Director of Culinary Operations at Polo Club at Boca Raton. Welcome to the call, Chef. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Also with us today, we have Master Chefs Anthony Seda, Jason Hall, and I'm Jerry Ford.
Hello, everybody. Good to be here.
So, Chef Ed, just to dive right into it, how has business changed for you and your team since April 1st?
Oh, quite a bit. in unimaginable ways. We actually, we actually changed the model and started doing everything the week of the 14th of March. So we actually had a wedding. I remember a wedding the 14th that night, finished up a couple of events, and then that was it. And then we went into a different mode starting on the 15th. So what we wanted to do was kind of get ahead of the curve when everything was going on and, you know, start preparing ourselves of how we can provide service and yet start keeping people safe and doing all of the stuff that we knew was coming without maybe official directives of saying shut down. One of the ways we had to look at it was how can we provide services. Part of the difference of, you know, the clubs where some used to up north is, you know, here we have a live-in community. It's like a big resort. So we have 1,704 houses, you know, over 3,200 members. And, they live in the gates, and this is their home. The club is an extension of their home. And when this thing started to happen, especially when New York got hit very hard as the weeks went on, a lot of our members that travel back and forth to both places actually bunkered down here. They felt it was a lot safer to be in Florida than it was heading back to New York. And, you know, I felt there was a strong obligation of providing service. A lot of the departments, of course, people worried, you know, let's shut down, let's do this, let's do that. But for me, it was more of a, hey, guys, we have a captured audience. They're going to need food. They're going to need supplies. You know, there's a lot that I think we need to provide and stay the course. And that's what we started doing. And, you know, we didn't go everything at once. You know, the marketplace was probably the second thing that we initiated. But we did gear up to do a restaurant takeout program. And basically the only challenge to that was just, you know, what were we going to pack in? What kind of vehicles are we going to use to deliver? Are we going to have curbside pickup? What is the packaging going to look like? What's best going to hold the food? And I kept two of the popular restaurants open and offered full menu items. And we started working out our system. So all of a sudden we found ourselves basically, you know, still doing business as usual, but instead of putting it on China and having service take it out, it was going into packaging, into boxes, and then into bags, and us running upstairs to curbside and doing delivery. So that was our phase one, as I call it. And then phase two was creating a marketplace because, you know, members were complaining they couldn't get food at the store. There were a lot of things that they were out of. So we immediately put together a lot of packages, worked with our vendors, And we started offering staple items from produce to dairy to deli items, even along with fresh meats from burgers, chicken, bakery items. We did try to do the sanitizers and some of those things, but of course, like everybody else, we were not able to get, but you know, we were able to get the toilet paper, secure some of those things that were hard to find. And I remember our first market day, I think, was in excess of $26,000 with over 255 deliveries. So a very hectic change of pace for us, and a very different way of doing things for sure.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Chef, this is Tony. Have you implemented any new receiving procedures, and what demands have you put onto your suppliers?
You know, in the beginning, Tony, it was almost business as usual, because as you know, for a while, it took a lot of data to get out and a lot of information to get out as far as packaging and, you know, whether the virus can stay on containers or cardboard. You know, I would say those first couple of weeks, it was almost business as usual. And then I think as this thing got stronger and went on and more information came out, the vendors as well started reacting, cutting back their delivery hours and how they were approaching it. And then we started as well to limit the amount of deliveries all at one time, making sure, you know, because especially with our volume, having, you know, one truck in the loading dock, unloading, finishing before the next one can come in. We didn't do a lot on the cardboard and stuff, to be honest with you, because we felt just trying to wipe down boxes and trying to do all these things would have just not been such an easy task for us or even practical at the time. And most of our stuff came in refrigerated trucks, or fortunate to have the heat that Florida has, you know, even in those, in March and April, we were at 85 degrees, 80 degrees. So we felt pretty comfortable with that, but we did more of a holding off how many people can come in. You know, before I'd come in, there'd be 2-3 vendors lined up inside, you know, dropping carts off, getting fish weighed. So we limited it to one person at a time. We made sure to delivery people had masks on and also used gloves. The same with our guys. You know, we wanted them that safe contact before that became a mandatory thing. You know, we passed out masks and we made sure that they changed their gloves with each delivery. So if the produce guy came in after he left, change gloves and go on to the next delivery. And we pretty much just streamlined the operation. We streamlined the amount of deliveries coming in. I pretty much shut everything off on a Saturday and Sunday. You know, and had the chefs just make sure that the order days they had everything in, timed it with my purchasing manager where she would be off a certain days and come in to reload. So we cut down the amount of foot traffic and took the volume in at certain times and basically stocked up. When we started the market, you know, that hit us a little hard because of the amount of the market for the first few weeks. So what I didn't want to do was become like a Costco where we just had a huge amount of food. So we started doing pre-orders and making sure we had at least a grasp of, you know, what the orders would be. So we'd have enough in the house. And then I did an extra 10, 15% of items. So missed orders, people who said they called, didn't get things, we would have in place. So I was just trying to streamline the operation some and make it more efficient how we operated.
Very good. Okay. You know, one of the things too that, you know, are the suppliers, are they treating their trucks before they, you know, load all their supplies on? And, you know, we've got this, you know, optic, and, you know, basically you're a customer too. So we want to make sure that, you know, you're building a trust. So, you know, how are they sanitized and which way are they doing it to assure you're building up a trust in your supplier?
We were pretty fortunate because, you know, a lot of our suppliers reached out to us as well first and wanted to assure that, you know, our business is very competitive here. I have probably an ornate amount of vendors for any club in the area because I don't do the one-stop shopping. I still believe in fish houses, meat houses, produce houses. So it is very competitive. So a lot of them approached us first and said, hey, here's the steps we're taking. Here's what we're doing. And then what we did is we looked at actually two things in our vendors, and one's maybe a little odd, but I also looked at the humanity piece, which was important to me. So we did look, as you said, right, the sanitation part, clean trucks. And that's one of the things the purchasing people would look for when the truck opened up and the inside's clean. You know, we made sure they, you know, we supplied wipes or they had wipes. They were wiping off the hand trucks, the delivery carts. So from that point, we felt pretty secure, and we inquired what the plants were doing themselves, is how they were operating, and basically they were rotating schedules, how many people they would have in. They sent us a pretty good checklist of the steps they were taking. But one of the things we did too is, there were a couple of companies that, pretty good sized companies, not the small mom and pops that release people very early. One person we knew was a purchasing manager in one of the houses. Some of these bigger companies came in and really slashed people and gave them furlough. And we kind of took some exception to that because, my whole goal with coming up with all the things I could possibly come up with was trying to keep, everybody employed here from front of the house, back of the house, keep us busy, have us building revenue. And, you understand it from some of the very small companies that, just can't afford it, right? They're not doing the business. Maybe they're just in a bad condition. But when some of these multi-million dollar companies started taking some of the local outlets here and stuff and letting people go and everything, we actually stopped doing business with them. Because we felt there was a humanity piece of this, at least for the first few weeks, that this thing started. So, two vendors actually lost our business because of that as well.
That's an amazing step to take. I haven't heard much about that humanity piece, and that's...
I know. It's a little controversial. My purchasing manager looked at me like I was crazy. But, I think through this whole thing, I've always said, right, it's a very difficult situation, especially hospitality, the restaurant business. I mean, we know, and you guys work at different ends of it. We know this is going to take a long time to rebound and get us back to maybe where we need to be one day. But when you look at some of the companies that have the needs to do things, and just don't do it, and I know there's a situation in the Boston Globe reading where an arena closed down and, every employee from the janitor, everybody was let go immediately, no pay, no anything. And, the person that owns it's worth $3.7 billion. I mean, how do you do that? To me, there is an obligation, especially when things get like this, to try and provide. So when we saw, some of our local companies we dealt with for years that got bought out by these big conglomerates, and they came in right away and let people go, we just said, well, that's just not the way we want to do business. We want the people, we had some vendors too that were telling us we're doing all we can to keep people working, even though we've rotated schedules and cut back a bit. We're making sure we have fresh drivers. We're keeping everybody, where they need to be in a safe environment, also keeping them busy, but rotating enough to keep the safety issue going. So that played some of our decision too, as far as who was there to support us and our efforts and just have that human piece of the business too, that we felt that was important.
Chef, this is Jason. How you alluded a little bit to sanitation protocols with your staff, et cetera. Can you elaborate on what you've changed and what you've implemented since all this has began?
Yeah. Jason, I think, again, for us, a little fortunate, I felt, any operation that's got to really do a complete turnaround because this happened, it was probably a questionable operation in some ways. When I got together, I think all we did was intensify what we were doing. I've always felt food safety, it was key in what we do. I don't think we realize sometimes the power we have to get people sick, whether, if we don't take care of a batch of food or do something. And when I was fortunate enough, I think, Gerald, you were there, I took the HACCP class, with CIA that was hosted at the Everglades. Mm-hmm. And, you learn so much about those things, as intense as it was and sometimes just too mind-boggling as we sat there 8 hours a day. You realize, the food safety really isn't about sometimes cleaning your floor, making sure you, wipe a counter quickly, but it really is that interaction of the food from the time it enters the building, gets to the employee, gets mise en place, and then, gets to service. So that's something we've always been pretty stringent about with our temperatures and taking things. When the health department comes in here, nine kitchens, five restaurant venues, and we've always fared very high. So for us, I think it was just an intensity of it. The glove thing to me is always a challenge because philosophically, I don't believe in gloves. I think they're a false security and a false safety net. And when you go out to malls, you see food kiosks, you see what some of these people are doing. It's just that, they're touching everything with their gloves. They're not constantly changing them. And, gloves can be more of a hindrance than, doing the right thing, which is washing hands. So we were always very big on washing the hands, you know, keeping that going. But I didn't, you know, the gloves do create that sense of perception, even with members, because at that time members were still, you know, coming in for the first couple of weeks and eating, and we did have some buffet service. So gloves were just changed a lot more often, and that's what I made sure that anytime they touched anything but what they were touching, they would change the glove, but still had to wash their hands. We increased the sanitizer use again. Like for me, it's still about proper sanitation and taking care of yourself. But we did realize that, again, you know, for the public view and what was going on, especially if we had the alcohol base, that it was very helpful, you know, for this virus. So I think on all, Jason, all we did was intensify and really, I really had the chefs hammer down even more what we were doing, that it had to be done on a more consistent basis and more often during the day. And that's what we really, we practiced and structured, you know, the food safety piece, everything we always did. And I'm very comfortable with that kind of operation. So I think it was just more the situation of, hey guys, more wipes, more sanitation buckets out. Let's just take everything we have done and put it on steroids, because now's the time that we really have to do that. And that was our approach, and still is to this day. I think what it'll do is whenever we get back to whatever the norm will be, you know, some of these habits they are now gaining because of the intensity of what we've done and how we've had to work, I think will stay. So I don't think that's such a bad thing.
Absolutely. That's a good point.
No, I think we're getting to a very positive, a new norm, relooking at some of the old things that maybe weren't working, or just the standards that weren't being upheld. I've had that conversation multiple times about ServSafe as it exists is actually, you know, a good set of standards that would keep people in the right throughout these current times.
I think that this just drives home the fact that we really should be practicing ideal practices.
Yeah, and then what we did in early April, we just did actually mandatory classes for everybody again, whether it was up or not up. From our dishwashers, we had it done in Creole French. We had a whole bunch of chefs go through, and cooks. I made it mandatory to everybody take it. Because again, as you know, right, guys, it's just like, you know, we learn how to cook. We learn all those classical techniques, those nice methodologies, and sometimes we forget. And when you go back to them and just relook at a video or study something again, you go, oh my God, yeah, that's what I'm not doing anymore. And you bring that back home. So I thought by everybody taking the classes again and just getting things fresh in their mind, and, you know, things that even though they studied, I know that maybe they knew, we're now back at the forefront, because, as you know, the daily grind and when you're trying to put out food and do what you do in battle every day, some of those fundamentals sometimes get left behind. So refreshing them and bringing people back to the foundation, I think, is a good thing.
Chef, I know when I was with Perkins Restaurants, the Board of Health had the HACCP program that was part of their evaluations, like every other visit or so. Are they still doing that in the state of Florida?
Not so much, Tony. You know, most people don't practice or have it. I think if they see sous vide or something of that nature in there, then they do inquire. But we find that, too, that, you know, sometimes with the rotation of inspectors and what's going on, some of them aren't even as versed. You know, we do a lot of things and make a lot of things in-house, so we do keep the logs. We do have some of those manuals out and stuff. So we had, I forgot what, December, we got questioned on something, and as soon as we pulled it out and had a HACCP format and everything, he goes, oh my God, okay, this is great. You guys are good. But yeah, it's not something they necessarily drive and ask about unless they see signs of certain products being done in the kitchen.
Very good, because I think with, you know, this new, the new normal that may be coming about, they may resurrect that again, not only in Florida, but maybe across the United States.
For sure.
Ed, you spoke on earlier about implementing kind of a market, and you talked about how you tweaked your service a little bit. You said you had a very busy Mother's Day, right?
Yeah, Mom's Day we ended up doing, I think, almost about 780, 800 dinners.
How does that compare to what you would have done otherwise?
You know, ironically, not too far off. You know, where you do lose the ground is, of course, on Mother's Day, and when people were coming to the property, we just had so much stuff to offer. So you had the nice formal brunch upstairs where, you know, dress up, it's decorated, the big pastry buffet, all the stuff people like. But then we also had our pool open, and you know, that pool cafe would probably do about 600-700 that day. Then we had another smaller type brunch in one of the other venues. So that diversity of offerings and having all those people coming to the property to enjoy themselves and play sports and socialize, you know, was missing. But our sales, even for April, we were very fortunate. If we were up and running full boat compared to the sales we brought in between the marketplace, the regular menus, and then we initiated a lot of what I call phase three, which was special events and special nights, which I felt were important. Our sales were really only off, if I took away the banquets and the event piece, you know, maybe off 15-20%. So we're very fortunate the way we kept driving business. And, you know, we did a lot of, I guess, you know, I tried to do some innovative things to just break up the monotony and still give them the experience. You know, like one of the things they love is a prime rib night. You know, they still love a great prime rib night when you come out there and chefs are carving and, you know, all the fixings. So we actually did a prime rib dinner on a Saturday evening and took the pre-orders. And the first one was over 350 covers. You know, in addition to the regular dinner menus. So I set up a whole different section of the kitchen and a team just focused on doing the prime rib and packing everything from the popovers to the, you know, complete dinner. So I packaged everything as a price fix. So we started coming up with some creative things. We did a chicken bucket night, fried chicken night. And, you know, I think the first night we did that was about 250 buckets of chicken. Then we did another 260 in the restaurant. And then we did a bucket and pizza night. And that ended up selling about 100 pizzas, 175 buckets of chicken. We got a Chicago Italian night coming up this Friday. You know, we got Frank Sinatra's chicken, you know, some of the things from my time in Chicago I spent. So they're ordering that now, and they have until Thursday cutoff. So we're almost at about 180 so far. And then after Memorial Day, Thursday, May 28th, we're going to do what I call dueling pizzas. You know, taking the idea from dueling piano bars and banjo players. You know, it says which is the best. We're doing a New York slice style pizza. So one of those big 16, 18 inch pies versus the Chicago deep dish. So they get the pre-order, they got a nice selection of pizzas, and that whole night we'll dedicate to the pizzas and then let the members know, you know, which pizza sold the best, the Chicago or the New York one. And we found by doing those, really a lot of appreciation, and a lot of members felt, you know, from just ordering off of menus or going out there just to have these kind of specials and things that we would do when we were fully in service was just really nice to be able to get in their own home. And so we really continued to drive that, even though I drove some of the chefs crazy with it, it's gone very well.
Can you talk a little bit about your what you're going to do for Memorial Day, or maybe even the 4th of July coming up, what you're thinking?
Memorial Day right now, we've done a couple of things. We created a barbecue pack, which is basically burgers, dogs, you know, the grill out stuff. Because I felt trying to deliver that hamburger hot dog experience to go wasn't going to be very practical. So we went the lobster route. So right now we're doing a lobster bake, and we experimented. You know, we got lobsters in last week and broke them down, par cooked them. You know, we get the potatoes, the New Jacket potatoes, the corn on the cob, and we put in a nice lobster butter broth, sealed the tins very tightly. And then we played with about three variations of oven times, you know, trying to think about people's ovens at home commercial versus the commercial oven. And we ended up finding a system that once they put it in their oven, and I think it was like 12 and a half minutes or something, they pull it out. And then once they open that tin, all that steam is in there, you know, all the aromatics from the thyme, the lobster, the broth, the butter, and they have the lobster still perfectly cooked. They got the potatoes and corn. So they're kind of getting their own lobster boil at home. They get all the fixings on the side. They're getting dessert, coleslaw, cornbread. And we wanted to make it foolproof because everybody's like, oh, you know, have them boil water and stuff. I said, no, man, we can't. You know, some of these people, I don't even know if they know how to get a big pot like that and boil the water and finish lobster off, you know. So I just picture my emails after that one. So, you know, we worked and you know, did some R&D and made it innovative and made sure it would be foolproof for them. And I think we're at about 360 lobster dinners right now. So, you know, things like that we've tried to do as well as convenience and simplicity to make it happen for them. July 4th still up in the air because we're probably we're looking at opening restaurant operations. probably June 2nd, and that's with 50% seating. And we're very fortunate to have a big outside cafe. We have two courtyards, so we have a lot of outside seating that we'll probably focus on first, along with the limited inside seating and reservations. But one of the things we're looking at trying to do, depending on the temperature, you know, come June and whether we're on phase two with the governor or not, is still maybe doing something outside. You know, I do a street fair here every December, you know, 3,000 people we do in the parking lot, front parking lot of the club. We have a huge golfing ground, unbelievable space. So one of the things we're talking about is, can we do some kind of picnic basket? Can we do some kind of golf cart event where they all come in golf carts and have a parking space and, you know, stay within the social distancing? And maybe we have a central band or DJ and at least try to bring them back to something, you know, try to give them something for all the things that they're missing and haven't done, but do it within the safe mannerisms. And, you know, we're fortunate to have that kind of space to do it. So we're in the planning mode right now of trying to do something like that. And if, you know, if things stay in good stead, then that'll probably be our direction where we'll try to do it. And, you know, most of the members do have golf carts to get around and everything. So we thought, how cool would that be if we can have 300-400 golf carts around, everybody at least listening to some music, enjoying some food, and yet still staying, you know, in all that safe space. So that's what we're focusing on right now.
Excellent. Thank you.
Chef, you know, employees are very important to your organization. How are you keeping them, your team, motivated?
Yeah, that's a good question, because you're right. You know, the human capital at the end of the day is still the most important asset you have. And I found a couple of things when this first started, because, you know, people do panic, they worry, people have bills to pay, you know, there is a livelihood at stake. And basically the driving was, especially with the chefs, that every day be positive. You know, we're not selling doom and gloom. You know, we're not doctors, we're not politics. You know, our job is one thing and one thing only: keep people working, keep providing our members with an experience as different as it may be. And, you know, I think by coming in and doing that and, you know, greeting them every day and asking questions, and we've had departments make stuff, you know, I've had the pastry department make baked goods and stuff and bring them upstairs. So, you know, the only way I know how to keep people happy and keep good times good is through food. And I think more than ever, good food was needed, and for people to eat. And, you know, at least I know coming to work, they'd have a nice meal. You know, even our employee cafeteria, which was shut down, we ended up packing everything. And, you know, I know cold food can get a bit boring, so what we ended up doing was packing hot food in tins. We started packing individual dinners, lunches, put them under the heat lamps, you know, filled the salad bar up with all grab-and-go containers so people still had access to their meal. You know, and then, believe it or not, the specials. You know, the specials and the things we do are kind of crazy, and they do take a lot of work. And packing food is an adventure. You know, people think, oh yeah, that's all you got to do. Yeah, I'm talking to some of the board members. Oh, you know, we'll just do to go. We'll pack everything. And yeah, okay, but it's a little more than that to have containers on the line, pack the right thing with the right container, then get it into the bag, and then make sure the dupe's going with the bag. Make sure that bag gets out where it needs to go and gets the rolls or the food from the other restaurant. So, you know, the manpower that was needed to do that, you know, especially when we first took off and we're doing 400 or 500 dinners a night, was really big. And, you know, the runners had to run upstairs and to the upper valet area and bring it to the car. So we set out tables, greeting tables, all outside. So, you know, I pushed on a lot of things. And when I started doing the prime rib night, the fried chicken nights and stuff, the chefs were like, you know, you're crazy. What are you doing? I said, what am I doing is we're offering a service to our members, number one, right? We're giving them some good stuff. But what I'm also doing is we're creating work for employees, because all this stuff we have to make, all these things we have to do and then pack, and, you know, all the extra work is keeping everybody employed. It also has us bringing in revenue. We're one of the few departments that can bring in revenue in a tough time like this, because, you know, golf ended up shutting down. Tennis ended up shutting down. So all those things were all gone. And the only full operation that was still going was food and beverage, you know, and culinary. You know, the board was very generous. They set up a COVID pay. And outside of some of my stewards, my department and the my colleague that runs the front of the house, we were probably the least users of the COVID pay because we kept everybody employed and working. And we're now working on a reward system that hopefully when this is all said and done, those who worked and came to battle every day and provided the essential services are going to get some kind of reward, whether it's PTO time or bonuses. So we're going to make sure we reward all those people. So we just created a good, fun environment and synergy with cooking and still doing what we love to do. People have gotten to do different things, you know, because lunch slowed down a bit after I did the market. So we took some of those cooks. Now we got them helping prep dinner. So they're working with food that they didn't work with before and working with all the prep guys in dinner time and interacting. You know, pastry has been going crazy because we've done all kinds of things. I've included desserts with all the packages. I think the other 1 week we made like 3 dozen, you know, real New York cheesecakes with the cookie crust and everything. And then we had to do over 400 popovers. We've been selling banana bread. So I just looked at the operation is, yeah, we're changing the model, maybe how we do stuff, what we're putting stuff in. But it still comes down to cooking great food. It still comes down to getting everybody involved, more cross-training, give people opportunities to be part of things. You know, we have people working in the bread department training with my French baker. So we just kept a lot of energy up, and people were happy to come to work. A lot of employees stopped in my office to say thank you. And even some of the members, we've had two times where the members have really got, I think it was on Saturdays, they got in their car at 3:00. And they all line up. It's like 50-100 cars, and they all drive through the upper valet honking their horn, thank you signs. You know, we're out there waving to them. So we've tried to keep it as a fun environment, a challenging environment, and hey, this is what it's about. You know, I've always said, you know, character really has nothing to do about you when it's going well. When life's good to you and things are going well and operations going well, it's easy to have good character. But when your back's against the wall, you have challenges to meet, you know, that's when somebody's true character comes out in your leadership. So how do you respond? How do you lead the team? And we felt it was important to be positive as heck. And the more things we came up with, the more revenue it drove, and it kept everybody working. You know, everybody's been packing, and we learned a lot. You know, we've learned, I think, some systems, some things, how we've done things. You know, if I do prime rib night again, even when we're open, you know, the whole system we created in the back of the kitchen and the central part, keeping it separate from the restaurant operation so it was smooth and seamless, is something we may use again. So I'm also, you know, I got a whole folder, Days of the Virus. I keep all those kind of things from menus to reports to things we're learning of how we operated. You know, we've had a chance to clean out our huge freezer. We've had a chance to streamline things and get things in order. So honestly, you know, outside of the havoc it's caused the world and some of the things, it's, you know, we've kept it very positive in here. And, you know, we've had people cook family meals sometimes at night, you know, just lighten up a little. As I told the chefs, let people enjoy coming to work right now, because this is probably the only good time they have is when they walk through these doors, you know, of some certainty and some security.
Very good.
Absolutely. It's great. Chef, any plans for the next few months? I mean, we're kind of in a phase of not knowing what the future holds, but any plans you're going to implement or contingency plans you have in place you'd like to share?
You know, that's a good one, because I just came out of an hour meeting today, because we have all our budgets due on Monday. And what we're finding now is that we're going to probably make 2, if not 3 budgets, because, you know, there is no answers right now. You know, nobody really does know what's going to happen. You know, will there be a second wave? You know, maybe, most likely. But how bad will it be, right? If people wearing masks, all the hygiene practices we're doing, you know, the government, maybe the country being more prepared for something like this, you know, will that second wave really be worse than the first? There's just so many unknowns. And then when we first looked at assumptions, you know, we made assumptions because, of course, you can't make your budget until you have some concept of what you're doing. You know, the assumptions look kind of grim. You know, we even had a few months where we were going to shut down again, knowing the second wave's coming. We're going to go through the same exercise. But the past week, we've been meeting and fighting the other way around, that, hey, you know, it's we can't go into this all doom and gloom. Let's look positively. Let's look at how we're going to deliver experience, you know, because no matter virus, no virus, you know, holiday week's coming. December's coming. Holidays are coming. And yeah, maybe I can't feed the 1,400 in-house for Christmas Eve, but we got to find a way to feed probably 800 to 1,000 people somehow, whether it's so many get to come to the club under the regulations, and then the rest, again, we have a food to go program. You know, how are we going to battle all these things? So I think we're going to look with some optimism and hope, at least for the members themselves and the a la carte dining and some of those things, we're going to try to keep as strong as possible. I think where the biggest questions come, and, you know, from the pulse of all the clubs around here, the resorts that I talk to and hotels, is what does happen to catering and events? You know, will there be a day that we can have, you know, an event of 400 safely? You know, or will that be allowed? You know, will there be just minimum numbers? You know, we've thought about getting created our ballroom seats 800. So, you know, if you take 25-30% of that, right, we can space tables out easily at 6 feet apiece. We can just do six tops and, you know, make sure people follow the regulations of the social distancing. So I guess that's the biggest unknown, is what is going to happen and what we'll be allowed to do as far as that piece of the business, which, as you guys know, your banquets and events help drive a lot of what you do with your restaurants and other stuff, even financially. So without doing those events, without having some of those, could be a challenge, but that's probably the most thing that's, I guess, uncertain at this point for everybody. But we have taken the direction that with a la carte and the restaurants and services, we're going to try and get creative. We'll use our outside space. We'll, we may do seatings and stretch it out. So instead of the magic hour of feeding 250 in 90 minutes because everybody wants to eat at the same time, maybe we'll finally be able to stretch it out to a three-hour night that's more feasible for the kitchen in front of the house. We're hoping that maybe this...
Any club chef out there knows.
So, I said, well, even the restaurants are out here, right? It's everybody just wants to eat that the lovely wishing hour. So I said, even if we space it out and do the three seatings, I'm still going to do the 240 covers. The only difference is I'm going to do them properly instead of the way we used to do them. I said, but you still need that team. You still need the people there. And, I do think people will take later reservations or whatever they can get, because it's going to be the same even, outside. So we're just going to try to really push hard. And, we feel that you can always cut back, but I think the ramping up thing is harder. I know there's two trains of thoughts, but for me, trying to cut labor, cut resources, and then let's say things aren't that bad, or the second wave really isn't terrible, and people have learned to live with this, and we're going to go on and have business and do things. I just don't think you can put on a light switch and say, okay, let's ramp up. Let's go find good qualified people. Let's get ready to, give the members all these services. So I think it's easier, again, to probably reduce and cook back, but try to look at the best case scenario. So, that's what my first budget's going to be. Hey, at least from the a la carte point of view and some of the member events, let's move forward. Here's what we think we can do for the numbers. But again, our challenge is trying to decide on the banquets and catering. What is going to be allowed? Will there ever be large groups? My street fair, unfortunately, looks like, it may not happen. I usually do 3,000, 3,500 people. That's probably an unlikelihood that we'll see that kind of gathering so soon,
Just to piggyback off of your budget, because you were touching on that one, are you budgeting for any new equipment or, anything specific post-COVID or in the time of COVID?
I'm looking at a little harder, I guess, of what I really need. I think a couple of things. One, I've been blessed in my 5 years here to pretty much rebuild just about everything. I finished a $2 million project last year for my poolside restaurant. Redid my steakhouse into an Italian Tuscan chop house, put in a new kitchen there. And, the club's been very supportive of when we need things. So, as I talked to the chefs and food and beverage, I said, look, we need to be a little proactive. And, I look at it hard that if I really had to go the year without buying anything, if we had to go 1 year without maybe that new stove that was slotted for, we can do that. And I think chefs who want to be smart and just keep, to me, the most important assets, which is the human capital, I think you have to sacrifice somewhere and recognize that, whether it's a private restaurant, hotel, or, even a club, resources are going to be limited. Money has to be made at some point, or some kind of reasonable fiscal responsibility. So, my meetings, I said, guys, look, we're just, here's what we're going to cut. We are going to cut restaurant supplies. We are going to cut china and glass. We're going to look at all those operational lines and really just slash the heck out of them, because we've been fortunate, we've been supported, and I'd rather go that route first to reduce numbers and then look at people. So I think there's things you can be smart about and just really say, you know what, yeah, it's a nicety, but not necessity. If I look at anything that I know is a real necessity that has an impact, I'll probably put it forward. But honestly, for this year or going into our 2021 budget, I'm looking at an almost a flat line of that stuff. Yeah, I think it's time for us to recognize, hey, we appreciate what the club did during this time for the employees. I really don't want to cut labor. I want to keep driving the business. But I do realize that there is a sense of financial responsibility. So let's cut on these lines. If we have to wear our uniforms for one more year, guys, we wear it for one more year. But let's be part of helping to recoup and get back on track here. And I think, a lot of chefs can do that in the areas and, again, try to protect the most important asset, which is your people.
Excellent.
Well said. Good episode.
Excellent.
Chef Ed, is there anything else you would like to touch on?
Never short for words, Gerald. You know that. I kept you on the phone the other day for how long?
I enjoyed our conversation. I mean, this has been a great call. So I'm.
Yeah, I can get philosophical sometimes. No, the only thing I like to say is, again, I think, we have been through a tough time as a business. And, when I talk to the club magazines, of course, those people, very club-centric, but I'm well aware of the whole industry. I've been fortunate enough to work in all aspects of the industry, from restaurants, hotels. And I think all we can do, as far as being a team and looking out for each other, is probably the most important time is right now, because it isn't going to be as easy as maybe some think. And I think getting on track, and when you look at all the people unemployed, how many people are going to have this disposable income to maybe go out for that really nice dinner? Or maybe how often are they going to be able to come out versus what they used to do if somebody in the family is still out of work? And, when I look at how hard we work in our industry and the cooks, the dishwashers, everybody, I think the more we can do to stick together, to offer whatever we can, whether it's, just good ears to listen to, some empathy, trying to do things, I just think is essential right now. And like I said, that's why I'm a little low key about what we do, how we do it. I'm proud of the team and what we've provided, but I'm also in a scenario where we have the resources here. I have a captured audience. When I look at the restaurants near me outside my building, doing to-goes, I made sure, honestly, a couple of times a week, even my wife, I went and picked up food and I bought food. And, not necessarily because I was real hungry or wanted to, but I thought it was important to try and keep people in business, and I got bento box near me. I got an Italian restaurant named Prezzo. There's a couple of others. And, even to buy a cup of coffee at Yoke, which is a nice breakfast place near me after my workout and stuff, just to give them business and just to try and keep their numbers going. And, a couple of them, I used to go in at night, and it was amazing to see how many tickets were lined up. And though they were going crazy and everything, man, it was just good to see that at least, there's something going on and some sort of business. And I think the more we can support our industry as a whole, I think we will bounce back stronger. But I just think it's going to take a lot of time. And, my heart goes out to the independent operators who maybe 10, 20 years had their restaurant and, will just find themselves maybe in a position to say, just can't do it anymore. So I just think we always need to remember that, because, we're blessed sometimes with some great opportunities, great jobs, but there's a whole other piece of the industry that needs us more than ever. And, that's why supplying vendors, and that's why I took that human approach to, I deal a lot with Halpern's Beef. And one of the things I liked about Halpern's is they kept every employee employed to some level. They may have cut schedules a little, but, when I talked to Mr. Halpern himself, he assured me they were keeping everybody busy, everybody working, allowing people to use built up time. And I just felt, okay, that's the company I want to deal with, because they do understand there's a human side to the business, and they're not taking this drastic action right away. So I just think as a whole, I think we could pull, but the more support we can give and encourage people to, whether it's buying something in a bag to go out or do whatever, it helps people more than we think.
Excellent. Ed, what I really like what you've done is, even some of our independents could really learn from, this particular podcast, because what you have done is you've got a fiscal plan and you also have an operational plan. And I think that's what, you know, many of them that are starting or trying to get back up into, you know, building their business back up again, really don't understand those two factors that are necessary. You've got to have a plan, work the plan, both operationally and also fiscal.
No, you do. And you can't, you know, and honestly, we were supposed to open up 2 weeks ago. And I met with the new GM, and actually the 19th was going to be our opening day. And I said, you know, at this stage, let's push back. Let's go to June. Let's do it right. Let's get a sense of what's going on now that the restrictions have lifted. Let's plan it properly so when we open, we really are prepared to open. And then let's make sure we still have a to-go outlet, because there are going to be people maybe nervous to come in the beginning. I think it's going to take a while to build the trust in the business. And that's why I came up with more specials and more things that I just felt was important. Just tell people, hey, hang in there. We're going to open. You know, we know you want to come back, but here's what we're doing in the meantime, and we're doing it for the betterment of the bigger picture, so it's more sustainable long-term than a short-term reaction.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
Beautiful.
Well, it was a pleasure. Enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks for your time, Chef.
Thank you.
Stay safe, and we'll talk again soon.
Perfect. Cheers.
Thank you, everybody.
On behalf of AMCO, I would like to thank everyone for listening today.
This podcast has been recorded in association with South Bend Equipment, Winco Equipment, Colorado Mills Sunflower Oil, and is part of the AMCO American MasterChef Order.
This will be an ongoing series going forward. If you heard any topics today that you would like us to expand upon on a future episode, please feel free to contact us with questions or topics.
Please subscribe or share if any of this information has impacted you in a positive way. I'd like to thank you very much for your participation in joining us in. I invite you to stay tuned in to the AMCO podcast. Soon, we'll be launching a monthly panel discussion in regards to the MasterChef exam. Looking forward to sharing more with you. Have a great day.
You can reach us at podcast@AmericanMasterChefsOrder.org. Thank you.